breast, and his face was shaved, but he looked rumpled somehow. "Did you see the press conference this morning?" Faith felt the hair on the back of her neck stand up. She'd barely managed a shower, let alone had time to turn on the television. "What?" "The press conference," he said, as if it was common knowledge. "I thought Amanda pushed it, but it's not like she consults me. There was a press conference?" Faith realized she had stood up. "Why didn't you tell me?" "I thought you'd appreciate the sleep." "Why the hell am I here?" she demanded. "What am I doing?" "Hold on," Will interrupted. He was still sitting in his chair, a confused look on his bruised face. "What did I do now?"
"What did you do?"
"Whatever it is, I'm sorry. I really am." Will leaned forward. "Let's just talk about this, okay? Please sit down." His genuine remorse took some of the fight out of her. She sat down.
"This is ridiculous.
Just tell me what you want to do. We need to define my position on this case." He still seemed at a loss, so she gave him some options.
"Am I still your lackey, or school spokesperson, or chauffeur, or—"
A loud bang came from the office next door, followed by laughter. Phones were ringing. The day shift was starting to straggle in. Will seemed to realize this just as Faith did. He squeezed around his desk and pulled the door closed. He waited until he was seated again to tell her. "We're in this together."
"Then why aren't you telling me things?"
"I just thought—" He still sounded baffled. "I thought you'd appreciate getting some extra sleep. The press conference was just smoke and mirrors. There was no reason for both of us to have to suffer through it." Faith could think of all kinds of reasons. A chance to talk to Abigail Campano again, to see the mother and father interacting. The opportunity to find out what the reporters had dug up on their own, or just the common goddamn courtesy of being included in the case she had been pouring her life into for the last 3 days. Will was looking down at his desk, but Faith had been the mother of a teenage boy long enough to spot guilt when she saw it. She asked,
"What else?"
He didn't answer, so she pressed.
"I know there's something else, Will. Just go ahead and tell me."
A sense of dread filled his voice. "You're really not going to like it." Faith waited. She could clearly hear the conversation in the next office, cop talk, somebody bragging about kicking the knees out from under an arrest. Will said, "I talked to Evan Bernard this morning."
"By yourself?"
"With Amanda." Faith let that sink in. Was it Amanda who didn't trust her? It would be very like the older woman to make her own decisions and leave Will to clean up the mess. Was Faith mad at the wrong person? On the other hand, if that was the case, if Faith's being left out was coming from Amanda, then why wasn't Will telling her? She rubbed her eyes, too tired to see through the layers of deceit.
"What did he say?"
"In his opinion, we're looking at an illiterate adult, not someone with a learning disability." Faith found the leap extraordinary.
"He got that from 3 notes?
"I'm just telling you what he said."
"How can someone get through school without learning how to read and write?"
"It happens," he said, rubbing his jaw. Faith felt more than snubbed this time. The press conference was one thing, but she had real questions for Evan Bernard. Primarily, how could he be so sure from 3 short sentences that they were dealing with someone who had a learning disability rather than someone who was perfectly normal and trying to cover his tracks? Will said, "The lab is going to call us when Gordon Chu gets here. He's the fingerprint expert."
"Why didn't you use one of our guys?"
"You only get a few chances to chemically process paper. If there's a fingerprint on one of those notes, Gordon will find it." Will tapped the keyboard on his computer to wake it up. He started reading something, probably his email. "Did you do anything with that vial?" She was conscious that sound traveled both ways.
"I put it in the right hands."
This ends Disc 7. Fractured Disc 8.
He kept his eyes on his computer, moving the mouse around, clicking. She didn't know if he was pouting or scared to say the wrong thing again. As usual, his topic of choice was the last thing she would have predicted. I had to have a root canal last year. You're very lucky you're with APD. The GBI's dental plan sucks. I had to pay $1,500 out of my own pocket. Faith made a sympathetic noise, but she was about ready to snatch the keyboard out from under him. Do you want me to leave you alone so you can play with your computer? He had the grace to look guilty. Finally, he sat up in his chair, actually looking at Faith as he talked. The ransom call from the cell phone came from a tower that services most of Atlanta. The ransom call analysis won't be ready until noon. Charlie still doesn't have anything tangible on the Prius. We're waiting for Paul Campano's DNA to come back to see if it matches Kayla Alexander. It's been almost 3 full days since the girl was abducted. And it looks like we're going to waste another 2 hours waiting for people to answer our questions, which, by the way, is only going to lead to more questions.
You make it sound so easy.
Yeah, by the way, I'd call your union rep if I were you. The Alexanders are suing the city for mishandling the identification on their daughter.
Fuck, Faith groaned.
Will tapped his fingers on his desk. I'm sorry. We're in this together, okay?
You mean in the lawsuit?
He smiled. Maybe that too. Faith couldn't get bogged down in this crap and still do her job.
What's our plan after the fingerprint guy?
Amanda wants us to talk to the copyright employees to see if they noticed anything suspicious about the construction workers. Then we're supposed to meet her at the Campano house. The kidnapper said he would call at 10:30 this morning. Hopefully we'll have some new information to go on then. A drop? A new proof of life?
We've got a solid description of Adam's Chevy Impala on the wire. Every cop in the city will be looking for it.
Let's just hope it's still in the city.
He sat back in his chair, hands folded across his flat belly. Faith asked him, "Did Amanda tear you a new one?"
"No," he said. "I was surprised. She's very hard to work for.
I can imagine."
He held up his hand, thumb stretched out at an angle. "See this?" he asked, indicating a faint scar in the webbing. "She shot me with a nail gun 4 years ago.
"On purpose?"
"That's the question," he said, folding his hands again. Since this seemed to be turning into a pilot on Amanda party, she told him, "She dated my Uncle Kenny when I was a kid." Will nearly fell out of his chair.
"What?"
Faith explained. "My dad's brother. He was a colonel in the Air Force. Amanda dated him for..." She thought about it. Amanda had left Ken right before Jeremy entered high school.
"Almost 15 years.
"I didn't know that."
"Amanda didn't tell you when she put you onto my mother?"
"No. But as far as I know, she never interfered. She just told me to be fair." His voice sounded odd when he answered. Faith remembered something her mother had told her. At the time, she had found it strange, but now she understood. "My mother didn't talk about you much during the investigation. But one time she told me that she trusted you to do the right thing."
"That's nice," Will said, though she gathered by his expression that he was feeling duped. Faith was beginning to see that this was classic Amanda. She never gave you the entire picture. She tried to change the subject, talking about his dank office. "The view doesn't really improve in the sunlight." Will rubbed his jaw again.
"No." He was silent for a moment, then said, "I'm sorry I left you out of the phone call and the press conference. It won't happen again." She wasn't quite ready to accept his apology, maybe because he kept leaving her out no matter how many times he said he was sorry.
"What was Paul's reaction to all this?"
"He was his usual asshole self," Will said, "trying to control everything."
"What about him?" Faith asked. "Doth he protest too much?"
"Paul's an asshole. But I don't see him doing this kind of thing. He'd have to have an accomplice, a motive."
"I guess we'll know motive well enough when the DNA comes back.
It's not going to match." He seemed so sure of himself that Faith didn't bother to argue. The obvious culprit in any child abduction case was always the father. Actually, most domestic cases ended up pointing a big accusatory finger back at the father, no matter the circumstances. This was Will's case, and if he was so damn sure the man wasn't involved, then there was nothing Faith could do about it.
"I know him," Will said, as if he could sense Faith's skepticism.
"All right. I'm serious, Faith. Paul didn't do this." He kept pressing the matter.
"I know you don't trust my judgment on a lot of things.
That's not true."
"Then can I get a word in?"
Faith didn't trust herself to respond. She seemed to be making a habit of sparring with this man. And the end result usually had him feeling perplexed and her feeling like a heel. Will seemed to realize this too.
"All I'm trying to say is that I know this guy. Please, trust me. There is no way Paul Campana would be involved in anything that would hurt a kid, especially when it's his own child."
"Okay," Faith agreed.
God knew she'd taken more on face value than this. She glanced around the room, feeling a desperate need to change the subject.
"I don't mean to pry, but do you mind my asking why you have two bags of home pregnancy kits by your window?"
He actually blushed as he turned around to look at them.
Faith rushed an apology. "I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said..."
"I forgot they were over there."
Faith saw the boxes peeking up from the bags, their happy little logos. If only she'd had access to a kit when she was pregnant with Jeremy. Maybe Faith wouldn't have waited until she was in her third trimester to tell her parents. She put her hand to her neck, wondering where that awful thought had come from. She must have been more exhausted than she realized. He said, "I think my girlfriend might be pregnant." His words hung between them, and Faith tried to pin down when exactly their relationship had gone from coolly professional to personal. There was something so kind about him under his awkward manners and social ineptness. Despite her best intentions, Faith realized that she could not hate Will Trent. She glanced at the myriad kits. There had to be a dozen of them.
"You can't just dip those in the toilet. You have to have a fresh sample."
Will opened his desk drawer and reached his hand all the way to the back.
"I've got this," he said, pulling out a test stick. "I found it in the trash. Do you know what this signifies?"
Faith stopped herself before touching the stick, remembering at the last minute that someone had actually urinated on it. She looked at the result panel. There was a single blue line.
"I have no idea."
"Yeah," he said.
"Anyway, I got all these so I can figure out which brand it is and get the results." The obvious question hung in the back of her throat. Why don't you just ask her? But Faith figured the fact that Angie Pulaski hadn't mentioned the test to Will in the first place was proof enough that there was a serious breakdown in communications. She said, "Let's go through them now." He was obviously surprised by the suggestion. "No, I couldn't ask you to do that. We can't do anything until Bernard calls. Come on." Will only made a show of resisting. He emptied the bags onto his desk. They started opening the boxes, breaking the plastic seals, finding the test sticks, comparing them to the one on Will's desk calendar. They were nearly to the last one when Will said, "This looks like it." Faith looked at the plastic-wrapped tester in his hand and compared it to the used one on his desk. "Yep," she agreed. He unfolded the directions that came with the test, skimming them to find the right section. He glanced up at Faith nervously, then looked back at the directions. "Let me," she finally said, putting him out of his misery. There was a drawing on the backside. "One line," she said, "that means it's negative." He sat back in his chair, hands gripping the arms. She couldn't tell if he was relieved or disappointed.
"Thank you for helping me with that."
Faith nodded, sticking the directions back in the box.
"Spell check."
"What?"
"Yesterday, Bernard said that computers make it easier for dyslexics to hide their problem.
he shrugged. It would make sense that someone who was functionally illiterate would do the same thing. Faith closed her eyes, remembering the threatening notes. The way the words were jumbled together, they were spelled correctly, right? Is L-E-V a word? She pointed to his computer. Type it in. Will didn't move. It's a word. What does it mean? His phone rang. He didn't move to answer it. Faith had seen him acting strangely, but this took the cake. The phone rang again. Do you want me to get that? He reached over and pressed the speakerphone button. Will Trent. It's Becky in the lab, a woman with a pronounced Yankee accent said. Gordon Chu is here. Will pressed the off button on his computer monitor. He stood up, straightening his jacket. Let's go. The forensics lab took up the entire second floor of City Hall East. Unlike the rest of the building, which was likely filled with mice and asbestos, the lab was clean and well lit. The air conditioning actually worked. There were no cracked tiles on the floor or jagged pieces of metal sticking out from the desks. Everything was either white or stainless steel. Faith would have eaten her gun if she'd had to work here day in and day out. Even the windows were clean, missing the great swaths of grime that covered the rest of the building. At least 2 dozen people buzzed around the room, all of them wearing white coats, most of them in goggles and surgical gloves as they handled evidence or worked on their computers. There was music playing, something classical that Faith didn't recognize. Other than this and the hum of electronics, there was no other noise. She supposed processing blood and combing through carpet fibers didn't call for much conversation. "Over here," a slim Asian man called across the room. He was sitting on a stool beside one of the lab tables. Several trays were laid out in front of him, and a large black briefcase that she was used to seeing lawyers carry was on the floor at his feet. Faith wondered if he'd brought the white lab coat he was wearing or if someone had let him borrow it. "Gordon," Will said, then introduced Faith. He offered her his hand. "Nice meeting you, ma'am." "Likewise," Faith said, thinking she hadn't heard such a lovely soft drawl since her grandmother had died. She wondered where Gordon had picked it up. He was probably a few years older than Faith, but he had the manners and bearing of a much older man. Will indicated the notes on the table. Gordon had taken them out of their plastic bags. "What do you think?" "I'm thinking it's a good thing you called me. This paper is in terrible condition. I'm not going to even try iodine fuming." "What about DFO?" "I already put them under the light. It's a mess, man." "Is there anything special about the brand or the watermark or generic as a pair of loafers?" Faith decided that hiding her ignorance was only punishing herself. "I'm not really familiar with chemical processing. Why can't we just dust the paper for prints?" He smiled, obviously pleased at the question. "I bet you dusted a cigarette butt for prints at the academy, right?" He laughed at her expression. "They've been doing that for as long as I can remember." He leaned back on the stool behind him. "Paper's porous. The natural oil in your fingertips leaves a good, readable print on a hard surface, but when you're dealing with fibers, the oil penetrates and migrates. Dusting it with powder is not going to bring out any latents. You use something like ninhydrin, which reacts with the amino acids and fingerprint residue, and hopefully you get a pretty little print and we bring home your little girl." The mood turned decidedly somber as they all considered how important these next few minutes would be. Will said, "Let's get started." Gordon took a pair of goggles out of his bag and a pair of green gloves. He told Will and Faith, "Y'all may want to step back. This is pretty toxic stuff." They both did as he advised, but Gordon still handed them paper masks to cover their mouths and noses. He leaned down and took a small, unmarked metal container out of his bag. He unscrewed the cap and poured some of the contents into one of the pans, careful not to splash. Even through the mask, the fumes hit Faith like a flash of gunpowder. She had never smelled anything so blatantly chemical. Gordon explained, "Ninhydrin and heptane, I mixed it up last night before I headed down." He capped the metal container. "We used to use Freon, but they outlawed that a few years back." He told Will,
I used the last of my stash 2 months ago. Hated to see it go.
Gordon used a pair of tweezers to pick up the first sheet of paper.
The ink's gonna run a little bit, he warned.
We already took pictures and made copies, Will told him.
Gordon dropped the paper into the chemical solution. Faye thought it was a lot like the old-fashioned way people used to develop photographs. She watched as he gently agitated the page in the solution. The type print shook, and Faith read the words over and over again as she waited for something to happen. She belongs to me. Whoever had written that note felt a closeness to Emma Campano. He had seen her, coveted her. Faith looked at the other note. Leave, L-E-V, her along. Did the kidnapper feel like he needed to protect her from Adam?
Here we go, Gordon said.
She saw stray marks start to develop, forensic proof that the paper had been handled many times by different people. The creases of the folds came up first in a dark orange that quickly turned red. Other stray marks showed smeared thumbprints. A series of swirls came into relief, their color reminiscent of the purple from ditto machines that they used to use when Faith was in school. Thanks to the chemicals, she could see where the paper had been touched over and over again.
Gordon murmured, "That's kind of strange."
Will leaned over, keeping the mask on his face. "I've never seen it turn that dark before."
"Me neither," Gordon said. "Where'd you find this?"
"A dorm room at Georgia Tech."
"Was it sitting near anything unusual?"
"It was in the pocket of a student. All of them were."
"Was he a chemistry major?"
Faith shrugged. "He worked with adhesives." Gordon leaned over the pan, staring at the dark print, the distinctive swirls.
"This is a left thumbprint. I would say that whoever made it was exposed to some kind of chemical that is reacting to the acetate in my solution."
He reached into his bag and pulled out a magnifying glass. Faith held her breath as she watched him lean over the toxic-smelling pan. He studied all the different fingerprints the chemicals had brought out.
"Based on the latents, we've got 3 different people touching this paper."
He looked at the black print again.
"I'd say the thumbprint is the only time the third person touched this page."
He indicated the position.
"It's in the bottom left corner. He was being careful when he handled it."
Will said, "He might have put his thumb there because he was trying not to touch it as he slid it under the door."
"He might very well," Gordon agreed. "I need to dry this, then I can look at the back. Why don't y'all give me a few hours to see what I can come up with? Do you have comparisons of the 2 people you believe touched this?"
Faith said, "Adams will be on file. We took Gabe Cohen's to rule him out before we searched Adams' room."
"What about Tommy Albertson's?" She nodded. Albertson had been an ass about it, but she had managed to get prints off him.
"Well," Gordon began, "get me the comparisons. This is a pretty excellent print, coloring aside." "I'll run it through APHIS," he said, referencing the automated fingerprint identification system. "The system's been running slow lately. You know the best way to go about this. Give me the right suspect, and I can give you a solid match."
"Will?" A tall woman with spiky blonde hair and the requisite white lab coat walked over.
"Amanda told me to find you. We got a hit on the sperm from the crime scene."
Will's shock registered on his face. He shook his head, insisting, "No, it can't be the father."
"The father? No, Will, I'm telling you we got a hit from the sex offender database."
She held up a post-it note. Faith read the name, hissing,
"Jesus, he was right under our nose."
Will seemed just as shocked as she felt. He asked the woman, "Do you have an address?"
Faith told him, "We know where he is."
"His house," Will said. "We need to check his house." He was right. Faith took out her cell phone and dialed the switchboard. After giving her badge number, she told the operator, "I need 1028 on a code 44. She read the name from the post-it note. "Patrick Evander Bernard." Chapter 15. Will slowed at a red light, looking both ways and blowing through the intersection in front of an angry driver. Amanda's voice was clipped on the phone. Bernard was picked up in Savannah 2 years ago for sex with a minor. She was 15. He roughed her up pretty badly. Bite marks, tearing, bruising. The skin on her palms and knees was ripped open. He pretty much did what he wanted to her. Why isn't he in jail? He pleaded it down to reckless endangerment and paid the fine. Will sped up, passing a truck. That's a slap on the wrist. Why didn't he go to trial? He met her in a bar. He claimed he took that as proof that she was 21. The prosecutor was scared the jury would equate her sneaking into the bar with asking for trouble. Will slammed on his brakes, nearly rear-ending a car that was stopped for another red light. She deserved to be raped for having a fake ID? The parents didn't pursue it. They didn't want their daughter raped again by the court system and the media. Will could understand their fear. Fewer and fewer rape cases were making it to trial for this very reason. The light changed, and he pressed the gas pedal to the floor. Why was his DNA in the system? It was processed through the rape kit when he was arrested. We need to get a copy of his fingerprints to Gordon Chu to match them against the thumbprint on the letter. We can't do that.
Why not?
Part of his deal with the district attorney was that his record be expunged if he kept his nose clean for a year.
But his DNA was still in the sex offender database.
She mumbled a curse. That's our fuck-up. He should have never ended up in there. He's not a convicted sex offender. Legally, we have no right to use Evan Bernard's DNA or his fingerprints as evidence.
But if we get a match, then a judge will throw it out before we even make it to trial.
Will felt the bottom drop out of his case. Unless the teacher was feeling particularly generous or stupid, they couldn't get a sample of Evan Bernard's DNA without a court order. A judge wouldn't sign off on the order without probable cause that Bernard had committed a crime. Illegally obtained DNA was not probable cause. Will stated the obvious. If we can't use the DNA, we can't link him to Kayla Alexander. He saw the possibilities fall like dominoes. No Kayla, no crime scene. No probable cause, no arrest. No hope for Emma Campano.
Faith's waiting outside Bernard's apartment right now. His unit is on the first floor. All the blinds are open. She can see straight into the rooms. There's a garage, but the car is gone. Without the DNA, we can't do anything. She needs legal cause to go inside. I need you to link Bernard to one of these crimes, Will. Get me into that apartment.
Will jerked the steering wheel, swerving the car into the school's parking lot. It felt like a lifetime since he'd been here, though only a day had passed. He thought of Emma Campano again, how a day could be an eternity for her, every second the difference between life and death. Bernard would know that they would come to Emma's school. He would know that they would eventually find out about the arrest, just as he would know that the apartment was the first place they would look. He had to be keeping her somewhere remote, somewhere no one would hear Emma scream. Two cruisers were parked on the street, away from the school's security cameras. Will jogged toward the front door, directing one team to go around the back of the building and the other to wait at the front. The rent-a-cops on the front steps seemed confused for a moment, but they knew better than to interfere. Will glanced across the street. The photographers were still there. CNN was doing a live news feed. The reporter's back to the school as she gave absolutely no new information on the case. She would have some information soon enough. This would probably be the scoop of her career. Will told the security guard, "Get some more of your men around here. Keep the press off school property."
"Yes, sir,"
the man replied, taking his walkie-talkie out of his pocket. Will took the steps up to the main building two at a time. He had already debated with Amanda about how to approach this. Emma Campano was in danger, but Evan Bernard couldn't hurt her while he was at school. Surprise was the only element they had in their favor. The fact that the ransom call was supposed to be made within the next half hour had sealed the deal. If they could catch him on the phone, that would be all the proof they would need. Will reached out to press the intercom button, but he was already buzzed in. Olivia McFadden waited for him on the other side of the door. She didn't mince words.
"There are two officers with guns in front of my school."
"There are two more in the back," Will informed her, ushering her down the hallway by her arm. He led her into the same conference room they had used the day before. "I'm going to tell you some things, and I need you to remain calm."
She jerked her arm away. "I run a high school, Mr. Trent. There's not much you can say that would shock me."
Will didn't feel the need to go into the fact that they had found Bernard's sperm inside one of his dead students. Instead, he told the woman,
We have reason to believe that Evan Bernard was having a sexual affair with Kayla Alexander. Apparently, she could be shocked. She sunk into one of the chairs.
My God!
She stood up just as quickly, her mind leaping to the next conclusion. Kayla had been murdered, but Emma was still missing.
He's got students.
She was heading toward the door, but Will stopped her. Is there a camera in his room? She was still trying to absorb the news, but McFadden snapped out of her surprise quickly enough.
This way, she said, leading him back into the hallway and to the main office. Colleen, she told the woman behind the desk, pull up Mr. Bernard's classroom.
The woman turned to the bank of monitors and tapped some keys. There were six screens in all, each partitioned into smaller images from various cameras around the school. They were all in color, all showing crisp, clear images. Colleen pressed another key, and Evan Bernard's classroom filled the middle screen. There he was in his rumpled jacket and patchy beard, walking up and down the rows of desks, surrounded by teenagers. The class was a small one, maybe a dozen kids in all. They were mostly young girls, their knees clenched together under their desks, pens scribbling nimbly as they recorded Mr. Bernard's every word. No one had their heads down on their desks. They seemed enraptured. Had the 15-year-old whom Evan Bernard met in Savannah looked at him the same way? Maybe she did, until he raped her. Will asked, "Is there audio?" Colleen tapped another key. Sound came out of the speakers. Evan Bernard discussing the importance of the awakening in American literature. Will asked, when is his planning period?
The principal provided, right after lunch, so he gets about an hour and a half between classes.
Can you give me an exact time frame?
Class ends at 11:45. Evan wouldn't have to be back until 1:30.
Plenty of time, Will thought. Adam's car was parked in the garage at 11:15. Paul Campano had made the 911 call at 12:30. Will asked the secretary, "Do you archive footage?"
"We have everything from every school year since we started recording in 1998," Colleen told him. "What do you need?"
2 days ago, Will said, from 11:45 until 1:30.
"Well, that's easy."
She kept the image of Bernard on the monitor and pulled up the information on another screen. The woman knew how to work the keyboard, and she had obviously figured out what they wanted because she tracked Evan Bernard's movements as he packed up his briefcase, left his classroom, walked down the hall, exited the building, got into his red Volvo C30, and drove away. Will tried not to get excited. When did he return? The parking lot was still on the monitor, and she fast-forwarded the camera until Evan Bernard's Volvo showed back up. The car slid into the parking space, stopping on a dime. Bernard got out, glancing around nervously as he adjusted his tie. He ran toward the building. Will thought Colleen was still fast-forwarding, but he saw that the man was, in fact, jogging.
1:32,
McFadden noted from the timestamp. He was late for class. The next frame showed Bernard running down the hall. Back it up, Will said. Something was different, and not just the man's disheveled appearance. Colleen worked the keys and froze the frame on Evan Bernard as he jogged down the hall. He was looking right up at the camera. His hair was messed up, his tie skewed. Will asked, "Can you leave that there and pull up the image of him leaving the first time?" Colleen went to work, and he stared at the live image of Bernard in his classroom. The teacher was still pacing up and down between the desks, still droning on about literature. McFadden was still incredulous.
"I don't understand how this can happen. Mr. Bernard has been teaching with us for 12 years. There was nothing in his background."
"You did a check, right?"
"Of course," McFadden told him. "It's state law. All school employees are screened by the police department before we can hire them."
"Oh, my Lord,"
Colleen whispered. Will saw that she had captured the images of Bernard leaving the school and returning side by side.
"He changed his clothes."
The shirts were the same color, but the style looked different. His pants went from black to khaki. Will remembered what Becky from the lab had told him earlier. Kayla Alexander wasn't the only source of DNA matching Evan Bernard. The seat swatch Charlie had cut out of the Prius had contained traces of Bernard's sperm, too. Of course, none of that got them closer to linking Bernard to Emma Campano. Even if they found a way to get a DNA sample from the teacher, all they could prove was that the teacher had at some point had sex in the Prius with Kayla Alexander. The telephone on the desk rang.
McFadden answered it, then handed the receiver to Will. Amanda demanded, "Why aren't you answering your phone?" Will patted his pocket, feeling the pieces of plastic move around. Amanda didn't wait for his answer. "Did you catch him?" Will looked at the monitor, Evan Bernard pacing the classroom. "We're waiting until he makes the ransom call."
"He already made it," she told him. "The proof of life was the same tape as yesterday, Will. I told him we had to have a new one or the deal is off."
"Is he going to call back?"
4 o'clock, she said.
Will checked the digital clock on the wall, 10:33. "I've been watching Bernard the whole time. He hasn't left the classroom, and he hasn't made a call."
"Shit," she hissed. "He's got an accomplice."
Will knocked on Evan Bernard's classroom door. The man seemed surprised to find him standing there.
"Agent Trent, come in."
Will shut the door behind him.
"Actually, leave that open. I've got students coming."
"My partner's keeping them out in the hall."
"I'm glad you're here."
Bernard picked up a book off his desk. There were triangles and squares in various colors on the cover.
"This is a copy of Emma's reading textbook. I thought maybe you could use it."
"I just wanted to go over a couple of things you said."
"All right."
He put the book on the desk, then used his sleeve to wipe the cover, telling Will, "Sorry, I smudged it up a bit." Will wasn't concerned about fingerprints. "You seemed pretty certain that whoever wrote those notes was illiterate." "I'm really not sure what you mean by illiterate, though. I mean, is it like dyslexia? Is that some sort of spectrum diagnosis where somebody can be at one end or the other?"
"Well," he sat on the edge of his desk, "the traditional definition of literacy concerns reading and writing abilities, the ability to use language, to speak in a fluent manner. Then, of course, you could take that out to the next logical step and use it to define a certain level of class or culture." He smiled, enjoying himself. "So, to say someone is illiterate, you would be employing the Latin ill, meaning not or without, without reading skills, without fluency."
"Without class or culture?" Will asked, gathering from Evan Bernard's cockiness that he had expected the police to turn up on his doorstep. The arrest in Savannah was public record. The man had probably been wondering what was taking them so long. As if to prove the point, there was a devious lilt to the teacher's tone.
"One could say..."
"That sounds a little different from the language you used yesterday."
"Yesterday, I was in a meeting with my peers."
Will smiled at the dig. He was glad to find the man underestimating him. "What about someone who is functionally illiterate?"
"Strictly going by definition, it is as it sounds, a person who is able to function or pass, if you will, in the real world."
"And you're sure that's the sort of person who wrote those notes?"
"As I said on the phone, I'm not an expert."
"You're an expert in something, aren't you?" He had the audacity to wink.
"Let's just say that I know a little bit about a lot of things."
Will leaned against the closed door, casually crossed his arms. There was a security camera mounted in the corner on the wall opposite. Will knew that he was in the camera's frame, just as he knew that Evan Bernard had signed away his right to privacy when the school had installed the security system. It was to the teacher's benefit at the time, because it meant any spurious allegations of sexual misconduct could be quickly dismissed. On the other hand, it also meant that anything Bernard said or did right now was being recorded on equipment owned by the school and, as such, was completely admissible. Will said,
"I guess you're familiar with your rights. They read them to you when you were arrested in Savannah, right?"
His smile didn't falter. "That was 2 years ago, Mr. Trent, as I'm sure you know. She was 15. She told me she was 21. You're barking up the wrong tree here. This is all just a misunderstanding."
"How's that?"
"I met her in a bar where alcohol is served. I assumed they checked her ID when they let her in."
"If you weren't guilty, why did you plead to reckless endangerment of a minor?"
He held up his finger. "Not a minor. That would be a felony. I was only charged with a misdemeanor."
Will felt a chill from his words. The man was not frightened of being accused, let alone being caught.
Evan, you need to start thinking about what your options are, the best course you can take to make this go easy for you. Bernard adjusted his glasses, bringing out his teacher voice.
You're wasting your time here, Agent Trent. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got a class.
Kayla was a good-looking girl, Will said. I can see where it'd be hard to resist something like that.
Please, don't insult my intelligence, he said, picking up his briefcase off the floor. He started shoving in papers as he said, I know my rights. I know I'm being recorded.
Did you know you were being recorded 2 days ago when you left the school?
For the first time, he looked nervous. I'm allowed to leave campus during my off period.
Where were you between the hours of 11:45 and 1:30?
I drove around, he replied evenly. It's the first few weeks of school. I had cabin fever. I just needed to get out.
Get out where?
I drove into Virginia Highland, he said, referring to a local neighborhood with coffee shops and restaurants.
Where did you go?
I don't remember.
Where did you park?
I have no idea.
Should I check for your red Volvo on the traffic cameras at Ponce de Leon and Briarcliff or Ponce and Highland? He didn't have an answer for that. Or did you cut through Emory? Should I check the traffic cameras there? Will told him, you might not have noticed, but the city has cameras at just about every major intersection in town.
I was just driving around.
Will reached into his jacket pocket and took out a pad of paper and a pen that he had borrowed from the front office. Write down your route. Then I'll go check it out and we can talk this afternoon when school is over. Bernard reached for the pen, then stopped himself. Will asked, is there a problem? You said this was a misunderstanding, right? Just write out where you were. I'll have one of the patrolmen check it out, then we'll go over your story later. The teacher took his own pen out of his jacket pocket and started to write. Will could see the nib of his fountain pen moving across the page in quick strokes. Bernard filled the first sheet, then turned to the next, writing more. That's enough, Will told him, taking back the tablet. He flipped from one page to the next, then back, before looking up at Bernard. You teach normal kids, right? Not just the stupid ones. He nodded, not correcting the gaffe. Will pretended to read the pages, moving his eyes back and forth. I just had a question for you, because I do this a lot. I ask people to write things down, and what I've found in the past is that the innocent people are usually so nervous that they forget things. They go back and forth, and they scratch things out, and they change words around. The guilty people just pick up the pen and start writing. And it's so easy for them because they're just making up shit as they go along. Bernard put his pen back in his jacket pocket.
That's an interesting observation.
Evan, Will said, it's going to go a lot easier for you if we get Emma Campano back to her parents.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm just as outraged as the next person that one of our students has been abducted from her home.
Do you remember when you first started teaching? Will asked. The state did a background check on you, right? You had to go to the police station and give them your social security number and your address, and then they took your fingerprints. Do you remember that? Bernard seemed to realize where this was going. His little game with the pen and wiping down the book had been for naught.
Vaguely.
What's going to happen when the fingerprints from your card match the ones we found on the threatening letters you slid under Adam Humphrey's door? He seemed wholly unconcerned.
I imagine you'll be investigated for fabricating evidence.
Even if Emma's dead, Evan, if you tell us where she is, a judge will look at that as a positive indication that you tried to do the right thing.
That's your reality, not mine.
He sat back in his chair, the smug look returning to his face. Kayla was a troublemaker. Everybody said that. Did she meet you outside of school? It wouldn't have been here, right? It would have been somewhere outside of school. Bernard shook his head slowly from side to side, as if he felt sorry for Will. "She's a good-looking girl. I mean, I know, man." Will felt his stomach clench like a fist. "I've been in this school 10 minutes, and I've already seen some girls." He shrugged. "Different time, different place? I wouldn't say no." Bernard took off his wire-rimmed glasses and used the tail of his shirt to clean the lenses. "Not that it's any of my business, but I'd be careful talking like that." He nodded toward the video camera in the corner. "People are watching." "They were watching 2 days ago when you came running back to school, too." He breathed on his glasses as if there was a spot he needed to get. "I lost track of time. I was late for class."
"Really? I assumed it was because you had to change your pants."
He stopped, his shirt tail still in his hand. "Cum stains are hard to wash out, aren't they?" Will smiled. He couldn't use the DNA from the rape kit, but it was perfectly legal for him to lie about finding another source. "Funny thing about cum, Evan. It takes more than one washing to get it out."
"You're lying."
Will counted it off for him. "I've got a dead girl with your sperm inside of her, and your bite marks on her breast. I've got video showing you changed your pants." Will didn't think about the risk he was taking as he lied. "The same pants we found with your DNA all over them."
"You can't go through my garbage without a search warrant, and you have no—"
Will forced himself not to smile, though he ached to tell the man he'd fallen into a trap. "Once the city puts the trash in the truck, I can roll around naked in it if I want." Bernard shrugged.
"Kayla was 17. She consented. There's nothing illegal about two adults having sex."
Will chose his words carefully. "This wasn't a recent thing. You've been seeing her for a while."
"Are you asking that because Kayla's birthday was 2 months ago?"
He shook his head, as if he was disappointed that the trap was so obvious.
"Our first time having sexual intercourse was 2 days ago."
"She was a virgin?" He gave a genuine laugh.
"She was the sexual equivalent of McDonald's."
"We found your sperm in Kayla's car." Again, he seemed unconcerned.
"So we had sex in the car."
"Oral? Anal?" He raised an eyebrow, another trap he saw coming from a mile away.
"I watch the news, Mr. Trent. I know that Georgia's laws are very strict where sodomy is concerned."
The arrogant prick thought he had it all wrapped up.
"You expect me to believe you just had sex with Kayla Alexander 2 days ago, but you had nothing to do with her murder?" "As you said yourself, I had to go home and change my pants. The last time I saw Kayla Alexander, she was alive and heading back to school."
"So you left school, had sex with Kayla Alexander in her car, then came back to school?"
"What of it?"
Will could feel his own smile spread across his face.
"I've got some more Latin for you, Evan."
Bernard held out his hands in a wide shrug, indicating Will should fire away.
"In loco parentis," Will said. "In place of the parent."
Bernard's hands were still out, but his expression had drastically changed.
"By law, you're Kayla's guardian, her acting parent, during school hours. According to the state, it's illegal to have sex with anyone who is under your supervisory control, no matter what their age is."
He gave the same open shrug Bernard had used.
"I don't think fucking a minor in her car in the middle of a school day is something a parent is allowed to do."
Will added, "even if it is the first time." Bernard's mouth closed. His nostrils flared. Will could almost see him going over the last 2 minutes, desperately trying to figure out how he had walked into the trap. The man cleared his throat, but instead of addressing Will, he looked directly into the video camera, saying,
"My name is Evan Bernard, and I am requesting this interview to be terminated so that I can consult with my lawyer about these spurious allegations."
"Tell me where Emma is, Evan."
"I have nothing to say to you. I know you didn't do this by yourself. Tell me who you're working with.
Mr. Trent, you seem to think you're well-versed in the law. I have just asked to speak to my lawyer. This interview is over.
Will walked over to the door and let in the two cops who were standing outside. He told them, arrest him.
For what?
Sexual contact. He turned around, making sure that Bernard was listening, with a minor. Will went out into the hallway and leaned against the wall. He could hear the cops reading Evan Bernard his rights, the polite responses the teacher gave in turn, assuring them that he understood everything. The man didn't scream or rail against the injustice. He simply seemed to be biding his time, waiting to be processed. It was as if, even as he was being handcuffed, the teacher still thought he held all the power. If Bernard knew where Emma was being held, he did have all the power. Will sank down onto his heels and put his face in his hands. He wanted Evan Bernard to resist arrest so that he would have to go back into that room and help the cops subdue him. He wanted to grab the man and throw him to the ground. He wanted to beat him the way Kayla Alexander had been beaten. Instead, he pulled out his cell phone, holding the pieces together so he could make the call.
Can I go in?
Faith asked. Her words rushed. She'd been standing outside Bernard's house for the last hour, waiting for Will to give her the word that they had enough evidence for a warrant. Will thought of the teacher, the smug look on his face, his certainty that he was going to get away with this. Call the county, he said. Tell them to pick up Bernard's trash, then go through whatever they put in the truck. I want you to photograph every step you take.
What am I looking for?
A pair of black pants. What about his apartment? Can I go in? Evan Bernard came out of his classroom, his hands cuffed behind his back, a cop on either side of him. Amanda would be angry at Will for not being the one to escort the prisoner outside, but he wasn't up to smiling for the cameras. The Atlanta Police Department could have this photo up. Will would be better off spending his time looking for evidence that would convict the bastard. For his part, Bernard's composure had returned, and he looked down at Will with something like pity.
I hope you find her, officer. Emma was such a sweet girl.
He kept his head turned, watching Will even as he was being led up the hallway. Faith asked, Are you there? His hands shook as he struggled not to break the phone into more pieces. Tear the fucking place apart. Chapter 16. Faith watched Ivan Sambor swing back the metal battering ram and slam it into Evan Bernard's front door. The wooden jamb splintered in a satisfying way, the cheap deadbolt breaking in two as the metal door swung back on its hinges. She had easily seen inside the apartment from the outside, but Faith walked through the four rooms with her gun drawn, checking the kitchen, the bathroom, and the two small bedrooms. Her impression now was the same as when she had first arrived on the scene. Evan Bernard had known they were coming, known that his earlier arrest for sex with a teenage girl would come to light, and that the obvious conclusion would be drawn between what happened on the coast and what happened to Kayla Alexander. Bernard had probably stripped the apartment the minute he had gotten home from school that first day. Faith could smell bleach in every corner of the house. The closet doors had been left open, easily seen from the bedroom windows. There wasn't a speck of dust anywhere, not on the kitchen table, the many bookshelves, or, when out of curiosity she decided to check, the blades of the ceiling fans. Even the tops of the doors had been dusted. Faith holstered her gun and called in Charlie Reed and his team. She leaned her shoulder against the door outside the second bedroom. The walls were pink. Blue and white clouds were painted on the ceiling. The furniture was cheap, probably second-hand, but it reminded Faith of a bedroom set she had seen in the Sears catalog when she was a little girl. The small chest of drawers and the four-poster bed were laminated in white formica with swirly gold trim outlining the knobs and various other architectural details. Fluffy pink pillows were scattered on the bed. There was framed artwork of Winnie the Pooh with Tigger. It was the sort of room every girl dreamed about in the 1980s. Outside, she heard Will Trent asking one of the cops where Faith was.
he had probably blown through every light on the 5-mile stretch between Westfield and Evan Bernard's apartment. Will's jaw was clenched as he walked down the hallway. He had an air of fury about him